Hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of the Black Spin Global Podcast. I'm Eugene.
I'm Lucy.
And yeah guys, welcome to the latest episode. And I'm pleased to say we're joined by a special guest all the way from LA, the Sunshine State. Jordan Samford from the Tennis Channel. How are you doing, Jordan?
Pretty good. Thank you guys so much for having me on. As you guys both know, I've been a huge fan, following you guys for a long time. So it means a lot, and I'm extremely humbled to be here today.
Oh, we appreciate you being, well, we appreciate you joining us. So thank you for being a part of today's show. Just quickly, how are you all doing? Like, Lucy, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I've been very busy. Work has been very busy. But, you know, counting down till we can open up a little bit soon.
Of course,
so
yeah.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, same. So literally just counting down the days until we get a bit more freedom with these lockdown restrictions.
A little bit of freedom.
And yeah, but what's the situation in LA, Jordan?
So in LA, it's always changing, but actually things are starting to open up a little bit more. So now we have both inside dining and outside dining.
Nice.
So this is our very first time in a year now, over a year.
Wow.
That we eat inside a restaurant. So it's starting to open up a little bit more, but there's a long way to go.
We hear that, and we just hope things continue the way they are so we can finally get back to normal, well, some form of normality anyway. But yeah, let's get into the show. So we're going to start by doing a roundup of like events from last week. So as far as we were concerned anyway, I was watching a lot of the stuff happening in Mexico. So it was Acapulco for the men and Monterrey for the ladies. And I don't know, did you guys watch any of those events?
Some, because a lot of them were because of the time difference.
Yeah, it was quite late for us in the UK.
Yeah.
What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, it's always a little hard with the time difference, but I watched quite a bit of Dubai.
Okay.
Not that much of...
Dubai, that was Karatsev that ended up winning there, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was his first ATP title as well, which was a good look for him. But yeah, just on back to Mexico quickly. So Acapulco, I was watching a lot of, well, Felix Auger-Aliassime. He got to the quarterfinals, and it was a decent run because the conditions in Mexico, that very, very like hot and sweaty. It kind of feels like they're almost playing like at altitude. I don't think they are, obviously, but yeah, the conditions are really, really difficult. But I did say before the tournament started, it would be good prep for Miami, because obviously it's the same kind of like climate conditions wise. So yeah, Felix, he ended up reaching the quarterfinals, lost to Stefanos Tsitsipas, who then went on to reach the final, that was a three set match, very, very like competitive. And Felix, he had a winning record against Tsitsipas up until last year, when I think Tsitsipas beat him twice last year, and that level they're like head to head, but yeah, this match was really, really competitive. And like Felix, I said after the match, like, he would be obviously disappointed immediately after, but I think in terms of like the level he played at, like during the week, I think it was a pretty good level. So I think he'll be in good kind of spirits like going into Miami.
It's really good to honestly see him make the quarterfinals, especially after the Australian Open too. I think he played Karatsev,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, in the fourth, yeah.
Yeah, that was a hard one for Felix. First two sets kind of like dominated him, exactly, to be honest. And I think the biggest thing with him is just the mental side. He has the game.
Yeah.
He has all getting past that mental barrier, because he's a seven-time finalist.
Exactly, which is a ridiculous achievement.
His
age. But no, 100%, I completely agree with that, Jordan.
Yeah, I've been saying a while that it's literally just, I feel like it's just a mental thing, especially when I feel like the higher he gets, like once he gets to quarterfinals, semifinals and finals, I think that's when it kicks in even more than the first couple of rounds. So I think, yeah, once he works on those, he'll be good.
Yeah. No, I agree with both of everything you both just said. Francis Tiafoe, he was also in the draw. He reached the second round. And yeah, with Francis, he just always ends up playing like these epic matches. So the first round was against an American qualifier. Let me just get his name. I don't want to like get his name wrong.
Don't worry, we'll cut this bit off while we're waiting.
I mean, so it was Brandon Nakashima, the young American, and yeah, that was a 3-set win for.
It was Brandon he played.
Yeah, in the first round. So I think Nakashima, he lost in the qualifying, but then Kevin Anderson pulled out because that was meant to be TFO's first round opponent. But yeah, Nakashima got like a lucky loser place in the main draw. So again, that's a good effort on his part as well, being a lucky loser, like to take Francis to 3 sets. And that was a clutch like tiebreak that decided that match. And I thought again it was a good effort on Francis's part, because he'd just come back from playing the Golden Swing, so like the clay court swing in like South America. So this would have been his first like hard court tournament since the Australian Open, which it's obviously tennis players have to adapt quite quickly, like with the nature of like the schedule and stuff. But again, I thought it was pretty
here with the whole pandemic, everything.
Exactly.
Everything is being thrown at these players.
This is what I'm saying. So yeah. it was a good effort, I thought, on Francis's part to kind of adapt that quickly. But then the second round match, it was tough to watch because, again, he had opportunities to basically win that in straight sets. So he played the Italian, who's like the kind of man of the moment at the moment, the young Italian, Lorenzo Massetti, I think his first name is Lorenzo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, that went to 3 sets. I thought Francis was going to win it in straight sets, just because he won the first set quite comfortably. I think it was like 6-1 or 6-2. But then, yeah, Massetti, to his credit, came back in the second, won the second. And then, again, the third set went to a tiebreak. And it was just like, oh, here we go again. And I think Francis did break in that third set as well, like in the middle of the third set. So he had opportunities to kind of basically go on to close it out, but he couldn't.
So frustrated too with Francis as well.
A lot of people say that. A lot of people. I've got like a, obviously we had him on the pod in December, and like, so he's a friend of the pod, as we say. But I'm one thing I've been telling him as well, I've been saying like he's been playing really, really well this year, like in terms of like his level of tennis. Like it's been a really good level. He's been losing really tight matches, like, and at very small margins. So as far as I'm concerned, like, he's doing all the right things. It's just a matter of like just continuing to play, and just one week it's all gonna click. Like, I've got no doubt. I don't know if you,
I agree with you, because when you look at his record, it looks like he's losing, you know, first round, second round, but the matches are actually quite close.
Exactly.
And he's giving a great effort. He's playing really, really well. So I think, like you said, it's all going to come together. Hopefully it comes together in Miami.
Oh, man, can you imagine? We'll get onto that later on. But no, like, this is exactly it. So that's the men kind of rounded up briefly. Onto the women. So again, where we were concerned anyway, Sloane Stephens, Heather Watson, and Jasmine Paolini, they were in Monterey for the 250 event there. And it was tough for Sloane. She lost in the first round, and she was the top seed. And it was, I don't, did you guys watch any of that? Did you catch any of that, Lucy?
No, I think I've shared on the pod enough that I emotionally, at the moment, watching Stephens is a big thing for me, because yeah. Like, you know, because I'm watching her like, oh, I know you can do it, and it's just like, do you get what I mean? Like, I know too much of my emotions are going to be into it, and I'm just going to start crying. But I think we spoke about, well, when I said we, I'm talking about like tennis Twitter, the Black Tennis Twitter. We were talking about, you know, her performance and stuff, and a lot of us started pointing out that we think that she just might need a break.
Yeah.
I think she's probably thinking playing is helping her. I'm probably thinking playing is not, mentally. I think she should just, you know, just sit down, have a break. Because if you think about it, actually, Stephens actually does play quite a lot.
Yeah, she does. She does.
If you think about it, she actually does play quite a lot. I don't think she's really ever really had a break. Like, she's not one of those players who don't really, you know, especially for a Grand Slam winner. You know, a lot of people, once they win their Grand Slam, they start moving like, oh, I don't need to play all my matches anymore. But she's been active ever since she started playing. So I think she might actually need a little break. So then maybe that will help her, you know, evaluate and stuff.
Yeah.
And also we need to remember that she also switched coaches for a little bit and went back to another one. And
yeah,
those type of things as well, they affect it because, you know, you're trying, you think you need a new team, you think you're going to new, but it's not working, then you're back again. And then you add her personal stuff, you know, like we said quite a few times, she's been going through a lot of stuff as well. So I really do think she might need to just stop, even if it's just for like, you know, a month or two or what.
Interesting.
Even though maybe we had COVID and stuff, but that's different because COVID, you know, it's like we all had to take a break, but from before and after COVID, she was active.
Yeah.
So maybe she might need a break during as well, see how other players are actually playing. I think it's another thing that Tiafa maybe might need to look, that France might need to look at. I think maybe he might need to look at a little bit more as well of how other players are playing so he can probably plan himself a little bit well. And I feel like Stevens might need to do that as well. But I think she just needs a break from tennis a little bit, like from the tennis world, and just, you know, enjoying herself, enjoying her future husband, and then coming back.
Jordan, what are your views?
I completely agree with that, too. I mean, I've known Sloane for a long time, and she's so talented. Obviously, she's a champion. But when I see her on the court now, I mean, it's kind of night and day from a few years ago. It just seems like she's kind of missing that love for the game, that passion for the game that she once had. And I think, like you said, she maybe needs to take a break, like take a step back from it. And, you know, find that happiness in the game that she once had. Because she's so talented. And she could be, you know, winning more majors. But I just think she's not happy right now. She has a lot going on. And that could be the key, taking a break.
Yeah, which is understandable. I think you're both right. But I did see there were some quotes, I think, after her first round loss in Monterrey, where she was kind of like discussing, or yeah, she was kind of breaking down the fact that she did take time off when she was injured before the US Open win. Was it 2017 she won the US Open? So she said before like that win, like she was pretty much out. I think it was like almost a year she was out for.
Yeah, she was out for a long time. Yeah, that's true.
And she said that basically kind of like reinvigorated like her love like for the game, like that time away. So maybe it is a thing of like being away from it for a while. It will kind of like, yeah.
No, because when you look at all these players, like the tournaments are back to back to back. Every single week you're at another tournament. It's just draining, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Travel and play this game that is sometimes it's hard. No, it's hard.
Yes. No, 100%.
And Steve has already spoken about how I think she struggles a bit balancing out her love for tennis and her day to day because she's. I don't know if you noticed, there was a time where, I think it was like probably 2 or 3 years ago, she spoke a lot about how, like, yeah, she's not really planning to do tennis for the rest of her life type of thing. Like, she wants to focus on other things. She always raised it a little bit here and there and stuff. So I think maybe it's actually something that she's been, like, struggling with or working on for a little while, trying to have that passion 24/7 for her to play well again, because you can just see on her face and like her body that she's just not into it as much compared to, you know, a couple of years ago when, you know, she was at the French Open finals, when she was at, you know, like winning her slam and whatnot. So I think maybe she just needs to work on that, just finding that passion and love again and enjoying it, and then that will automatically just, you know, just help with everything else.
No, 100%. And shouts out to Sloane. It was her birthday as well. I think it was on Friday, I want to say.
Yes.
Her 28th,
Friday,
her 28th birthday. So happy birthday, Sloane. And thanks for the... She commented on our post. You saw that, Lucy.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see. and again, so staying in Monterrey, just briefly, Jasmine Paolini, the Italian, she reached the second round. So she got a win against... I think it was Naya Hibino in the first round, and that was three sets. And Hibino, I think she was seed. I think she was the eighth or ninth seed, so it's a good win for Paolini there. But then she did lose in the second round to Anna Carolina Smidlova, I think her name is. And that was again a free set defeat. So Paolini gave a good account of herself in Monterrey. Heather Watson, our girl, our British Heather Watson, British number two, she lost in the first round in the singles to fellow Brit Harriet Dart. And that was a straight set, like pretty straightforward win for Dart. But then Watson did reach the final in the doubles with her partner, Zhong Sai Sai. I think that's how you say her first name. And yeah, they play in that final, they played Asia Muhammad and Caroline Dullahy, the American pair. And it was interesting because obviously you probably know a bit more about like Caroline Dullahy and Asia Muhammad than we do, Jordan, but that was their first time playing together, like, well, at an event, and they ended up winning. So
I was a little worried too about Asia for a second because she lost her doubles partner, of course, Taylor Townsend.
Yeah.
A little worried about, you know, who is she going to pair with, but she's such a great doubles player that I think she could, you know, take on anyone seriously as a partner.
It was a really good performance as well, like I thought, from Dullahy and Muhammad. Like it kind of felt like they were playing together for a long time, or they kind of known it. You can clearly see they get on, like, obviously. But I thought the chemistry on the court was great, like between them. And that was, again, that was a straight sets victory over Watson and Zheng. So really good week for Asia Muhammad and Caroline Dullahyde. And on Townsend, actually, we must say congratulations, who, yeah, just gave birth to a baby boy. So shouts out to Taylor Townsend. I don't know if you guys have anything to say or add to that.
You go first. You go. Sorry, Jordan.
I just saw that she's been working so hard throughout the pregnancy, and that's just been really inspiring. I know she's probably going to come back stronger, ready to go too. And she mentioned that before, that, you know, this isn't the end. She looks forward to getting back to the court, and I think she's going to come back pretty strong just because how much work she put in during this pregnancy. Like, it's been crazy to see. I don't know if you guys looked at her Instagram, and
she's,
you know,
works on Insta.
So, congratulations.
She's part of the Tennis Mom clique now. Tennis Mom clique.
Good one.
The American twang. I'm trying. Lisa, do you have anything else to add?
I'm just happy that she had a safe delivery. You know, first of all, carrying a child is not easy. Carrying a child as a Black woman is not easy as well. So really glad that, you know, it looks like she enjoyed her pregnancy. Like, her Instagram stories were very funny and everything. Like, it looked like she actually enjoyed it. So that's good. I'm just hoping that mood, you know, stays up. You know, a lot of women after they give birth, they're a bit more low and stuff. So, as long as she's healthy, mentally, physically, it's all good. I love Townsend. I love the way she plays. So really looking forward to her, you know, coming back and stuff. 100%. So, yeah.
Yeah. And again, her ranking will be protected, obviously, with her being out due to the pregnancy. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing Taylor Townsend come back. So, yeah, guys, the next topic, the Grand Slam format change that I want to discuss. So it was earlier in the week now, or last week, I should say. Simon Briggs from the Telegraph, is the tennis correspondent there. He suggested that men and women should play best of three sets until the fourth round at Grand Slams, and then from the quarterfinals, both men and women play best of five. And he basically argued that, you know, such a move will preserve the careers of the big three and those born in the 1980s, and also it will be, you know. Yeah, I'll just read the direct quote. So he said, the five set, three set split at Slams remains one of the few remaining barriers to full equality. And obviously, that's a big thing at the moment, like equality in, you know, sport and just across the board in terms of society. So yeah, guys, I don't know what your views are in terms of, you know, should men and women play best of five, or maybe they should just play best of three? Like, Jordan, what are your views?
In my opinion, I think it would just be so much better if it was two out of three at, you know, all the tournaments, also the Grand Slams for both men and women. Just because if you want that equality, you have to evolve. You have to change some things. And I know, I mean, we've had this for such a long time and there's that tradition behind it. But again, just in order to evolve as a sport, I mean, this is not only going to help the players and help protect themselves, and, you know, just with injuries and things like that, these matches are so grueling when they go to five sets. So when you take that out of it, that can really preserve not only the big three, but all these players that are playing tournaments every week. So it helps the players, and it also brings in more viewers, because, I mean, as tennis fans, we love watching tennis. But even the best of tennis fans, sometimes they can't stick in those long matches. Because they're too long. They're 5-hour matches, and they're going to turn it off. They're going to be like, you know, I have something to do. I'm going to check the score later. I'm going to come back. I think in order to grow as a sport, we have to shorten it. And this is also an opportunity to bring in other fans, to bring in the younger generation that, you know, wants that quick kind of match, that action. So I think it's a great opportunity for the players and just for the sport as a whole.
No, that's a good point. Lucy, your views?
I definitely agree with Jordan. First of all, when you hear a lot of people who are not fans of tennis like that, like us, the first thing that they say is, it's too long. That's literally the main reason why a lot of them don't get into it. It's just like, yeah, it's too long. And then I have to explain to them, like, no, it's not every match that's too long and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be defending it like, oh, yeah, but sometimes the longest match are the best. That's why I feel like I've always been so stuck between 3 and 5. And I think most times the ones that are the best, it all depends on the player. Do you get what I mean? If you have a team versus Nadal on clay, yeah, you want to watch that. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? Like, stuff like that on, you know, for like 5 sets. So, personally, I feel like it should be 3 sets for everyone.
From start to
Grand
finish.
Grand Slam or not, and whatnot. Mainly because you need to keep in mind as well, a lot of these matches we're watching, when these tournaments are on, watching from Monday to Sunday. And especially people like us who are, you know, we have to watch because we have to talk about it. Like, when Australian Open was done, I was like, oh, I can breathe. Like, it's like, oh, I can't even imagine for you, Jordan, because this is technically, like, you know, your job. Do you get what I mean? So, and I'm just doing this kind of part-time and stuff. And because Eugene does more, because, you know, he does the posting and stuff, I was like, okay, I need to step up. When it was done, I was like, thank God. I was catching up on sleep. So that's the thing as well. There's a time difference. There's, you know, and stuff like that. And you can see how it affects even the players physically. You know, a lot of them, they'll be playing these 5 sets matches, and then the next day, whichever it will work, they can't play at their best because they're tired from the match before. That's how the whole rule changed for Wimbledon after that Anderson match. I can't remember who he played against. Was it Nadal? I think so.
I think it was Mahu. It went to, like, yeah, it was basically non-stop.
I think it was Anderson and Nadal, if I am correct. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. The match continued the next day or something like that, and then they were either like, yeah, the rules need to change, and I think that is why the rule changed for Wimbledon.
I want to say that match went over like a 3.
I'm
pretty sure it was Nicola Mahu. I'm gonna Google it right now.
Yeah, Google it, because it was like a, that's the thing, because it was a semi-final or something, and they didn't have a break in between. Said, it was right the next day.
Wimbledon changed the rules after that match.
Exactly, yeah. So you can clearly see it's an issue. You can clearly see that it's a fit, like, you know, it's just way too long. It's nice, entertaining. And like Jordan said, you know, we're trying to get, you know, people to get into the sport. And I feel like tennis are struggling, like they're struggling. And you can see that's why they want to include, because even Simon Briggs, that's why it was such a huge...
It was John Isner, sorry, an American.
Oh.
26-24, the final 5th set score.
No, that was the first, that was the first longest match. But it wasn't that match who changed the rule. There was
one at Roland Garros, too. I do remember that match as well. That went over 2 days or so to finish.
See, this is what I'm talking about. That's absolutely ridiculous. That should not be normal. So that's why this whole thing, article, was a huge deal, because Simon Briggs was basically mentioning that he wants to do that because he feels like those big threes, it will help them. But it's not just about them. It's about literally the sport as a whole. Mm. And plus, to be honest, I think there was even a video of Roger Federer actually saying in an interview not too long ago, saying that, you know, he doesn't want to change it. Like, he's fine with it. But I feel like as a fan, you know, as someone who's, you know, working on content on this as well, we need a sport.
No, I hear that. I think you make a really good point, Jordan, about like the fans or bringing new fans in, because yeah. tennis, as we all obviously we love the sport, like for what it is, we kind of we've grown up with it being best of five for the men at slams, and you know women playing best of three. But I do think for some people, the idea of sitting down to watch a men's match at a Grand Slam is just like a no-go because it's just too long. So I think in order to bring in new fans, like I definitely think, yeah, it needs to be maybe, yeah, rethought, or it needs to be maybe, yeah, just looked at. So I think maybe getting the views of the players as well, like see what they think, and like maybe have a kind of, I don't know, like a, they can kind of decide amongst themselves kind of thing, like, and see if there's like a real kind of want or desire for that change to be made. But
I feel like out of all the other sports, tennis is the one where there's so many different rules for like different tournaments and also different genders. Yeah, do you get what I mean? So like there's three sets for the women, but it's five sets for the men for like girls. There's just too many different stuff. It's like,
yeah. It really is just chaotic when it could really be simplified. Just play two out of three. And I feel like it's a win-win. And for the players who can save their bodies, who are playing tournament after tournament every year, now you don't have to play those five-set grinds like that.
Yeah.
And you just adapt to a different, set situation, match situation. And I feel like tennis players are already in tune with that, being able to adapt. So, I mean, I don't see really a negative out of this situation.
Yeah.
And you gain more viewers in the process.
Which is what the sport needs as well. Like it needs like a new energy, I feel, like in terms of a fan base injection. Like,
yep.
Because obviously we're trying to get more kind of black people looking at the sport. But I think, again, we need more young people in it as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the age of the kind of, yeah, the overall kind of age of a tennis player, the average age anyway, is like, I want to say like 50s, possibly 60s. That's like the average age. That's something I saw, I think Patrick Mouratoglu was saying. But yeah, I think it definitely is something that should be looked at.
Yeah, and the thing is, I feel like they only focus on the big players for that. They're not focusing on the actual overall thing. Okay, so what do we need to look at in terms of how we're playing, in terms of the tournaments, in terms of getting a ticket to enter to Wimbledon, which is actually such a hassle. You know, all these little things, they don't understand that counts, but they're only thinking about, they're too busy thinking about, okay, what can we do to make it easier for these big players to play, and then we can sell those tickets. Because once those big threes are gone, you're going to have to start thinking out of the box, because the time is coming for them.
I agree 100%. So yeah, up next, getting to know Jordan, our guest co-host. So yeah, Jordan, if you can just basically talk about your current role. So you currently work for the Tennis Channel, but what is your role there? You're a writer?
So yes, I'm an editor. So I primarily write for tennis.com, for Baseline, for the tennis magazine, all the features, all the news stories. But I also write some script for some of the shows too. Nice. So for PC Live, for some of the back checks as well. But it's kind of a very diverse role. But primarily I do write features and current stories, trending stories for Baseline.
What you prefer doing in terms of like, yeah, the production stuff or the writing?
I have to say I love telling stories. So I primarily write for Baseline, which is more of that lifestyle off the court type of content. So not much of those, you know, match recaps that you see on tennis.com. A little bit less formal and just more lifestyle, more fun.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy telling stories about some of the off-topic things that you kind of never really hear about in tennis, and just telling different stories.
How did you get into the job? Like, what did you just literally apply, or was it a thing?
Yeah, so it actually took a little bit to land the job there. But before, I was actually doing something completely different. I was writing for an airline, actually, doing technical applications there. But I really miss the creative side to things, and I think that's where I thrive. And obviously tennis was a huge part of my life, so it kind of just made sense to do something within tennis. And all these jobs pop up for Tennis Channel. And it took me a couple of years, honestly, to land the job there. And finally, it came through, but it was a process.
Oh, fascinating. How long have you been there for now?
It's going to be 2 years in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with the whole pandemic as well, like, I guess that's kind of changed the way you work, like being, I take it you're at home, or is it?
It's all at home. And I remember when the pandemic first started, Indian Wells was actually about to take place.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. First tournament that I was actually going to go to and report from the tournament. And of course it got canceled. So I was just really, really disappointed about that. And not being able to see live tennis and, you know, to get to write about it in person. But it'll come. It'll come. Hopefully soon. Hopefully this year.
No, exactly. That's what we're all kind of hoping for.
So. Funny enough, this pod also started right before the pandemic, and then Indian Wells started. And we were just like...
what do we do?
And to be honest, it was all Eugene. I was just like, I think we should just wait. And Eugene was like, no, we should keep going. And it looks like we made the right decision. Yeah. That, you know, we just, but yeah, it's crazy how this pandemic just affected everyone and everything.
Completely.
Yeah. And I feel like it forced you to really get creative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. And yeah, so if you could talk about like your kind of entry into tennis. So you played college tennis.
Yes. I started playing tennis when I was 5, wow. Actually. Yeah, so my dad had, I want to say it was the 1997 U.S. Open final on.
Okay.
With Nick Williams and Martina Hingis. And he was watching it in the living room. And I'm 5 years old. I'm, like, messing around. And I come in and I'm instantly captivated by it. And I sit down next to him. I watch the entire thing. And as soon as it finishes, I'm like, I can do this. Aww. I can do it. I want to. And my dad, at the time, he knew absolutely nothing about tennis. He'd never played in his life. And he just started reading books. And he taught himself. And then he would, you know, take me to the court. He got me the rackets. We went out there. And he taught me from scratch. And absolutely nothing. And I just find that to be so fascinating. Because I don't know how he did that.
That is, yeah, but, that's insane.
Yeah, insane. And so from there, I played juniors, of course, a little bit of ITF, some professional tournaments. But then I ultimately decided to go the college route. I just figured that might be the best choice for me at the moment. And I could come back around to that professional side once I was done. But that didn't end up happening.
So not to cut you, so you played ITFs before college?
Yes.
Wow, so that's a really high level then.
Yeah. So I was playing a few before college, and then I had to kind of make that decision, which is unfortunate that you have to kind of decide being thrown, you know, these scholarships your way. But then there's also this pursuit of, you know, professional tennis, but it's a huge risk, you know, you don't know what's going to come from it. But if you accept money, you know, in the professional world, you can't ever go back to college and accept a scholarship. So it's like you are forced to decide.
So would you say that was a difficult decision for you to make then, in terms of like deciding, well, yeah, either going pro or going the college route?
Yeah, very, very difficult, because like I said, it's just a huge risk.
Yeah.
You know, of course I want to play professional tennis, but you don't know what's going to happen. And if you accept any form of, you know, money, then you can't ever go back and, you know, accept a college scholarship, which is a lot of money.
Yeah. So what college did you end up going to?
My freshman year, I went to the University of Maryland, and then the coach, he actually left and he went to Texas A&M. So the major reason that I chose University of Maryland was because of him. And since he left, I decided to leave too, and I went to Baylor University.
Oh, wow. Really good schools. Like, ooh, I'm going to say all Division One.
All Division One, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And just about that college tennis experience, because we had Rohan Whatley, I think he went to Chicago, and they were a D1 school. We had him on last year, and he was basically speaking about his, like, experience there, because he's British, but went to, American college to play tennis. And yeah, he loved the experience. So like, what was your kind of experience like in terms of like, playing the college kind of, you know, circuit?
I mean, definitely positives and negatives. I can't say it was the greatest thing ever, especially at Baylor. The coach that was there at the time, I had a lot of bad, you know, kind of moments with him during the process. A lot of injuries at Baylor as well. But I met so many great people, though. Yeah. So it's like a kind of a balance. There was definitely some negatives there, but I wouldn't say it was a great college experience, unfortunately.
I'm sad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, by my senior year, I had my best year ever and wasn't injured. So I actually got to play, you know, to my fullest potential. And I reached NCAAs. Wow. I played single player. I actually played Jennifer Brady.
Oh, and wow. Then What was the score in that match?
Okay, so I won the first set 6-0. I got off to a really good start, right? And then, you know, tennis is such a roller coaster.
Completely. Yeah.
And so I ended up losing in 3 sets.
That's a great effort to Jen Brady.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, this is someone that's, you know,
Australian Open finals. That is incredible.
Yeah, and then she was semifinals last year, US Open. So it's still something. I mean, you can still brag about that, you know.
That's incredible. So yeah. we've got a pro on the pod of us, Lucy. But like, mm-hmm. This is a massive moment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're just here downplaying.
If I was her and I had my kids, I'd be like, do you know what? I beat Brady when I was in college. Like, I beat her. I'm probably the reason why she's winning. So
you should be definitely bragging about that a lot more, Jordan, than you are. Like, because that's huge.
Yeah, no, it was a really, really good match and super competitive. So
what college was she at then? Because
she was at UCLA.
Oh, okay, so yeah.
You probably missed out, Eugene, a lot. There was a little controversy on Twitter. People were saying that she was a little bit more privileged because she played, you know, the college and blah, blah,
oh,
blah.
Really?
But, yeah, people were going out on Twitter. And I was just like, people made the money and didn't win.
This is the thing, like, and I'd love to get your take on this, Jordan. Like, there's a debate where people kind of say, you know what, going the college route isn't necessarily the best route to go down because you don't get the, I don't know, like you don't get the experience in terms of like the matches. Obviously you get a lot of matches, but you don't get the kind of the traveling around the world thing that, you know, these younger players are getting from, you know, when they turn pro at like 16 and 17 and they're playing the ITF circuit. Yeah. Like, what are your views? Like, where would you, if you were to give someone advice, what would you say to them basically?
I would say taking the college route is definitely a risk to your professional game just because you're missing out on 4 years there where you could have put 4 years, you know, starting your professional career.
Yeah.
4 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And, in the middle of that 4 years, you're playing every single day. You're training every single day. And also the level, it drops off. So yes, you're playing a lot of matches, but, you know, sometimes you're playing players that aren't that great.
Yeah.
Then you'll play someone that could be a professional tennis player, is, you know, super high quality, but it's just very up and down in college tennis. But I would say it can be done. Obviously, we see Jennifer Brady now.
Exactly.
She's definitely an exception. But, I mean, if you look around, there's not that many players that have come from, you know, that college background.
There's one player, again, it's kind of off topic, but I was watching him a lot in Acapulco last week. Dominic Kupfer, the German.
Okay,
so
yeah.
He played American college tennis, basically. People say he was like a bit of a late developer because he's like early 20s, possibly mid 20s, but he's only now kind of making his breakthrough. But when you see the level he's playing at, like he's top 60, top 70. Like he's playing a good level of tennis. And he's literally come from college, like the American college system. So I do think, there's arguments for it, definitely. But again, it's just fascinating to kind of hear your first hand experience. Like you said, the level kind of fluctuates, I guess.
And even in Brady's circumstance, I mean, look how long it took for her to, you know, reach all of Australian Open, the semifinal of the US Open last year. It didn't just happen overnight. I mean, that was years and years after college too. And she didn't go to college the full 4 years. So she got out early. You know, she didn't finish her college.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. she didn't finish her college career. So it's good in a way that she decided, hey, I want to go after this. I'm gonna do that now and not go through all my 4 years.
Did you play anybody else like of note that we might know, like in terms of that have gone on to make it pro or?
In juniors, yes. No one else in college.
Who did you play in junior level?
I played Madison Keys.
Oh,
in
wow.
Junior.
Oh, what was the score there?
I think it was 6-3, 6-4 for me. Okay. So.
Oh, you beat.
You can brag about this.
You beat Madison. You beat Madison Keys, like.
You know, US Open final is still big. You know, you're not beating small people. You're beating.
And how old were you both at the time?
In your tennis. I think I was 15 or 16.
That's incredible, because she was a very good junior player. Like she was smashing on the junior circuit.
Yeah, I played her a couple times because I do remember I played her again at a Carson ITF. I did lose to her at that event too. Okay. So yeah, we played each other a couple times there.
Wow. I'm a big fan of Madison Keys. Lucy's yeah,
great.
Lucy's
great.
A bit iffy. I don't.
I'm iffy. I'm there. I respect her, but I'm there. But Eugene's just so much.
I think her game is so big. Like, and for me again, it takes. She got to the US Open final. Like, she's got it in her to, you know, go all the way at these big events. So I think for her, I would not be surprised if she wins a few Grand Slams, like, in her career. Like, that's how highly I rate her.
Surprised either. I feel like she could do it. I mean, she has the big, you know, ground stroke game. But really for her, it's just, I think it's a consistency.
Yeah. Which is what Lucy says all the time. Exactly. Back to you then, Jordan. Like, so... your game style, like what's kind of your game style? What were your weapons? Like what were your favorite surfaces? Like, yeah, if you could talk about a bit about that.
Well, definitely as an American player, there's not that many clay courts or grass courts. So I would have to say hard court was definitely my court of choice. And I played a more counterpuncher game, but not just, you know, making balls, I wouldn't say, but stepping in, you know, but very, very well thought out whenever I was going to go and attack or come forward. Made a lot of balls and put the pressure on, you know, the opponent to make a lot of balls with me. Like, it was going to take a lot of work, a lot of time, you know, to win
not
match
giving
again.
Anything away.
Yes, exactly. Wow. Not making a lot of unforced errors. But attacking whenever I could or whenever I see an opportunity.
So you would say hard court's your favorite surface?
Yes, by far.
what about like to watch? So like when you're watching tennis, like, because yeah, I guess what would you say your favorite Grand Slam is?
I'd have to say actually Roland Garros.
Oh, okay. So you like the clay?
I love the clay. Yeah. I think it's just honestly, it's the environment there too, because I've been there. And it's just a very intimate setting, I feel like. And I do like that slower pace, too, that the clay court has.
Yeah.
And it probably better suits my game in a way, because I do like to make a lot of balls. And I can run down a lot of balls. So the clay slows things down and better suits my game. But I still like that hard court.
Interesting. So yeah. You've been to Roland Garros. I take it you've been to the US Open as well.
Never been to the US
really?
Open.
Oh, really? Wow, okay.
Have you seen the price of them tickets, fam?
Well, wait, have you seen the price of the tickets for Miami Open this year?
Oh, don't.
Are they actually really expensive?
Starting at $5,000 for a ticket.
We're going to talk about Miami later on, but that is a joke.
We are in a panoramic.
$5,000.
And that guy took a lot of time to give the people the stimmy as well. So I don't know why they put in $5,000. I don't get it.
He's going with the stimulus talk.
I don't get it.
Well, we'll talk about that later on. That is incredible. Wow. and yeah, favorite players. So obviously you played some of the best in the game, i.e. Madison Keys and Jennifer Brady. Like, but who both men and women, who would you say, like, who did you grow up saying, wow, like, I'd love to basically play like her or emulate her, like, or him,
my
to be fair.
Yeah, the player that I looked up to when I was playing was actually Martina Hingis.
Okay.
Because our games were very similar in that way. She made a lot of balls and she put the pressure on the opponent to, you know, make one more ball, to run down the ball. So that's a player that I really looked up to growing up. But now I would say my favorite players are Naomi Osaka
and Felix. Naomi, yeah. Oh, so Naomi and Felix. Okay.
Those are my two, yeah. My top two. Fair Everyone place. Knows.
It's pretty solid pick there. I like that.
Yeah. I feel like my tennis channel family, they always make fun of me because we do these expert picks before each tournament.
Of course, yeah.
And I picked Felix every single time. Every single time as my dark horse. I'm like, this is
this
it.
This is going to be his time. This is
when the US Open.
Oh, it's going to come.
Every tennis fan goes through this. We're like, yeah, this is the player that's going to win. That's it. This is the time. And then the final comes. You're like, what happens?
Felix's time is coming. I like that, Jordan.
So no, it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming, for sure.
You're loyal to Felix. I respect that. And obviously, we all love Naomi Osaka. But no, that's fascinating. Like, I'm still shocked that you literally beat Jennifer Brady, like, in college. Like, that's...
Well, no. I didn't beat her. I lost in three sets. Sorry.
Yeah, but we are going with
the... No.
I did win that first set 6-0, so, you know, there's...
It's incredible.
Exactly. Like, there's 6-0. That's a lot.
You beat Madison Keys in juniors. Like, that's a huge, like, claim to fame. So, massive shout-out to you. That's literally going to be the title of this pod. So, we're going to name it Jordan... who beat Madison Keys and took Jennifer Brady to three, joins us on this special now. I'm joking. So no, that's incredible.
Brady, Brady, who's that?
No, but that's incredible. But no, just again, like we're so grateful to have you on, like, in joining us on this episode, and like hopefully we can have you on like in the future as well.
Of course.
But again, we love the work and appreciate all the work you do. Like, I remember reading, obviously, the Bob Ryland article that I spoke about at the start before we got on. And I saw an interview you did with Jay Clark as well, a British player.
Yeah, I got to him. I think for me, like, the best part, the most rewarding thing is kind of focusing on players that no one's really talking about.
Yeah.
And also small businesses in tennis, because, you know, we're so focused on the big three and slam tournaments, but no one's talking about all the other people that are contributing to helping evolve the sport and grow it. And so I'm trying to bring that
100%, and it's appreciated and we see it. And yeah, just please continue to do that brilliant work.
Yeah, thank you.
So yeah, next, guys, and this is the final topic of the show. Miami Open, those tickets, like, let's just clear this up. So $5,000, is this on the official website or is this like a resale site?
Yeah, so if you go to the official website, it says ticket packages and it says starting at $5,000 for the ticket.
Jesus Christ.
And actually, if you go to Twitter too, Riley Opeka, he sent out a tweet, a comment about it, just saying like it's absolutely ridiculous because these aren't, you know, the tennis fans that actually love watching tennis.
It's a corporate,
It's not those people that are attending these events, sadly.
That's not, and even though as well, it's not going to be full capacity because obviously COVID restrictions. So
But
still, that's insane. $5,000.
For a ticket package. Yeah.
Unreal. But I take it though, that would be like one of those booths. So you get like a suite. I'm gonna say like that can't just be.
You get like some type of suite, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully if it starts.
You better get suite, oyster, caviar, everything. Or you get $5,000.
Food, yeah, you better get everything.
Because I do remember obviously the event didn't happen last year, but in 2019 it was the first time at, I forgot the name of the stadium, but it was the NFL. They basically converted the stadium. So and I on TV obviously as a spectacle, it looked incredible, like just. Yeah, the kind of optically it looked great. So I can't imagine really being there, like in terms of like how it would have felt. But those prices, that's insane. That is ridiculous. What are your views crazy. Actually? I'm gonna get before we kind of talk about, because obviously the draw's not been made as we record on this Sunday. But there's been a lot of talk about the event and whether it should even go ahead anyway, considering all the rules. On the men's side anyway, and we've just had Serena recently announce that she won't be playing as well. But yeah, Jordan, if you can just basically give us your take, like, are you happy to see the event go on, like, even though, you know, we've had all these withdrawals and, you know, the crowd restrictions?
honestly, I think the event probably shouldn't have happened. That's my point of view. I mean, we see what happened with Indian Wells again. I think they're responsible and they're like, you know what, it's gonna happen. We're not gonna get that 20% of fans there. We're not even gonna, you know, really try. We'll push it. Hopefully later this year they can have that event. But I really respect what Indian Wells did there. And then we have Miami, which I feel like Florida in general as a state.
Jordan, say it, because I have been saying it on this pod. The moment I saw Miami open, I was like, I am sorry. No.
I
don't get it.
You can probably tell us, like, yeah.
You can tell us, that's what I'm saying. I'm really happy because she's in America, so she knows even more than us.
Because that's what I'm going to ask. Is there unrest at the moment in Miami? Like, in terms of, like, just civil unrest in general? Like, I did see something.
I don't think so in Miami, but I feel like in Florida, I mean, this whole pandemic, they've been doing whatever they want this whole time. It's like almost a pandemic didn't exist in their world. You know, the way they're partying, they're having these, you know, like huge beach gatherings all the times, and you see it on the news, but it's like, it's okay. And now they're not wearing masks. I think in Miami they are, but parts of Florida, they're not, that's not a mandate anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just weird to see that people really believe that, you know, this virus doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
A thing. So I don't know. I think in my opinion, it probably shouldn't have happened. They could have maybe pushed it off to later this year, rescheduled it, anything. But I think the players too dropping out, I mean, that tells you everything.
Yeah.
No, I
hear that. Lucy, what about you? Your take?
I've been saying it from the beginning. I will never forget. When I saw the tweet, I was in disbelief. I was like, Florida, the ghetto. Like, honestly speaking, like, the way from when COVID started till now, just people been having COVID doesn't exist parties. They're just behaving like this crazy. And, you know, I think if I'm correct, spring break is coming, right, as well.
It is.
So there's that as well. Like, to me, I was just against it mainly because due to safety. I was like, no. Like, if they at least said no fans, okay. But when you're saying fans included and you want these players to fly in a place where people are not taking COVID seriously, then you're going to have staff as well. That's the thing. It's not even just the players. You have the staff as well who are risking their lives to make this happen. Like, just as if someone like, if a tournament, what, a Grand Slam like RG can postpone to September with horrible conditions the way they played, then these little tournaments can do the same as well and push it. I'm really hoping by the end of this year, you know, we're much better and stuff for people to have these tournaments. But, you know, like, you look at the calendar, you see how everything's going. There's really no point of having, like, I'm glad that Serena pulled out because she's one of those people that are kind of in high risk as well with COVID as well. Like, I was just like, no, I'm happy. But, and the good thing about it is that the big players from the men's side are pulling out, meaning, again, it gives more chances to these smaller players to, you know, go out, which is what I was happy about during COVID, especially for, like, the men's side. You know, if Djokovic didn't have that whole situation, and then, you know, those guys were not playing, who knows, team were probably not, you know, team won that tournament. I mean, he deserved it anyways, but yeah, that's the only good thing about it. It just gives more chances for the men, because the men has a big, you know, the big freeze and stuff, and I feel like WTA is by far much more entertaining and competitive. Oh, 100%. Like, the girls
at the moment, from,
like,
yeah.
The ATP, yeah, at 100%. The moment, like, honestly, the WTA honestly is just doing way better than ATP. At least we don't have that. I think Serena's the only big player from WTA that really whereas
this.
For the men, it's like boom, 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 and it's been the case ever since.
Yeah.
So yeah, but besides that, listen, I really hope everyone stays safe when they're there, because Florida,
it's not safe there. Don't go to Florida.
no way.
So yeah, as we kind of like already touched on, so yeah, no big three, obviously. So,
wait, what do you think, Eugene?
I mean, I don't. I'm going to go against everything you both said, but I'm happy. I'm happy to see it go on, but I completely understand people's concerns, like 100%. But as a tennis fan, and like, this is quite selfish, like, I want to see the event happen. Like, I want to watch that. Like, but obviously the main priority should be people's safety. Like, that should be number one priority. And I completely understand why players have pulled out for whatever reason. And like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it is a thing of, you know what, I don't fancy going to that particular place at the moment because they don't take this virus seriously and I'm just not looking to risk anything. Like, I completely get that. Another thing as well, I was saying to Lucy before we got on, James Blake is the tournament director. So this would be, I think, his second go at it, because obviously last year didn't happen. And I think his first time was 2019. And it was a success. So again, James Blake being a former top five tennis player, now tournament director, like, I want to see him, like, yeah, have a good career as a, you know, tournament director. And like, you know, having an event like this and it being successful, like, that will reflect well on James Blake. So for that reason, I want to see it happen, and I want to see it, you know, be a success, basically. So yeah, that's kind of my two cents.
Fair enough.
But I hear what you guys are saying. I completely get it. Like, yeah. So yeah, before we kind of wrap up, the draw hasn't been made. So we're recording this on a Sunday. The draw will be made today, as in Monday. But yeah, we said no Big Three, no Gael Monfils or Joe Wilfred Tsonga as well. And no Serena, which is a shame, but all the other top women are playing. So again, I think that's a big draw. Like, and like you said, Lucy, as well, the WTA at the moment, like, they're absolutely killing it in terms of, like, just being the most entertaining, you know, brand of tennis to watch at the moment. I think the women are doing an amazing job. So we hope it's a success. In for the Americans, actually, as well, maybe you can speak about this, Jordan. So you've got Michael Moe, Lucy, your fave, and Katrina Scott. They've been given wild cards into the main draw, which is great.
Oh, great. I'm going to be watching that.
Yeah, because I mean, the last time I saw Katrina Scott would have been the US Open last year.
I wrote a piece for Katrina Scott before the US Open. Yeah.
Like, what do you know about her? Because I didn't really know much about her before that US Open.
I didn't either. I mean, she's been playing a lot, and I think that she's really through almost. And she did so at the US Open. Yeah. She won her first round.
Exactly,
there.
Yeah.
And she lost in the second round. So that's huge for her. I mean, she's a teenager, so she's very young. And for her to get a wild card into this event, that could create some really good opportunity.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then in the qualifying, we've got, again, some exciting players. So we've got Christopher Eubanks in the men's draw. And again, he played qualifying for the Australian Open. I think he lost in the second round of qualifying for the Australian Open. But then he played Singapore after that. And who did he play in the first round? I can't remember who he played in the first round, but Alexei Popperin, the Australian, and he ended up winning the tournament. But that match, it was a straight sets win for Popperin, but it was two tie break sets. And Eubanks is playing really well. I remember actually watching that match. Eubanks played to a really high level. So again, good luck to Eubanks in qualifying for Miami. And on the women's side, we've also got Hayley Baptiste, Robin Montgomery, and Whitney Osigwe. They've also been given, they're in qualifying, basically. So they've got qualifying wild cards on the women's side. So I don't know if you know much about Hayley Baptiste and Montgomery and Osigwe.
Jordan. Yeah, I know very little about Baptiste, but I know she's been given some wild cards here and there, and she's kind of struggled a little bit, I think. I mean, you probably know a little bit more, but I don't know too much about her.
Yeah, she had a win, actually. I want to say it was in 2019 now. She beat Madison Keys. Where was it? It was an American event. Again, that was a WTA tour, so that was her first, like, tour victory. That came against Keys. So, but I hear what you're saying. Like, she hasn't kind of made the kind of jump or breakthrough yet. I think Montgomery, she's also, again, top junior. So now she's kind of making her way into, like, the, you know, the women's game. And I think she's only 16. She's not even 17 yet. And Osigwe, I think she's only 18. So it's just great to see, like, these youngsters basically been given opportunities. And I think the strength of American tennis at the moment is very, very strong, like, in terms of with the women.
Definitely on the rise right now. And I've never seen, I mean, this many Americans in general at these tournaments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say the women are stronger than the men, or would you say it's like an even split?
I would say the women for sure are stronger than And
yeah, no, women are winning, man. Absolutely. And before we wrap, I hate giving predictions, but it's something I think we should all do. It's just a bit of fun. So yeah, Lucy, who's your pick for the men and women in Miami?
For men, I actually do not know. For men,
you have to give. You have to give someone.
Okay.
Basically, I can give you like a bit of help. I mean, okay, not that you really need it, but I think I saw a stat today saying that literally all of like the all of the ATP 500s have been won by Russians since like Hamburg last year.
You know what? I wanted
year.
To say med, but this is a black people only pod, so I wasn't sure.
With predictions, we can say med. With predictions, we can say anybody. Like it doesn't. Okay. It's not all just. Right, cool. It's not unique to race. So
I was just making sure. You know, I'm trying to root for my black people, but realistically, I have med. He's been on fire.
He'll be top seed. So yeah, that's
yeah. He's top seed. Yeah. He's been on fire. Honestly, I love watching this guy play.
Really?
You're missing out.
I'm not a big fan.
I know he's Russian and he's a bit scary.
No, I like. Listen, I love Rublev. Like Rublev's one of my favorite players. Like I love watching Rublev play.
I'm telling you, I feel like for the past year and so, like, and a half, ever since I actually saw him at the ATP finals in 2019, okay, I went, that's when I started being a little bit interested by him. And I think he actually won that match, but I wasn't rooting for him at that time.
Interesting.
So that's why when that happened, I was like, okay. And then I started, this guy, he is, the way he plays makes no sense. He's absolutely insane. He's so entertaining. He's just like, honestly, he's the only Russian that I could really stand for so hard.
Okay, so med on the men's side and the women?
Yeah, and then women, I have either Osaka or Muguruza.
Yeah, pretty sound picks. Even though Osaka hasn't played since Australia.
Yeah, but you know, hard court is hers.
Okay. Jordan, what about you? Your picks? I kind of have a feeling I know who you're going to say, but
because Medvedev was my pick.
Okay.
I'm going to go with him too, just because he's been incredible. I mean, one of the most consistent players this season, and he loves hard court too. And he's the top seed. He's going to probably have one of the best draws in the tournament. I mean, he's at least going to the final in my opinion. There.
Fair. Women's side,
but also I have to say I like Felix too.
Felix has to go in. Felix
without even seeing the draw. He's my second pick for sure. And then for the women, I would probably say Osaka. Osaka, okay. Yeah.
Again, so you have no reservations of her not playing since Australia. Like you think you're.
I mean, not really, because she didn't play a tournament last year up until the Western and Southern.
True, yeah.
And then she won the U.S. Open. So I know she's training hard and she's going to be ready.
Yeah.
Osaka is just like Serena. She does not play her tournaments that much. That's like, you know, she's a fan throughout, in and out.
She plays a reduced schedule. Like, it's a reduced,
reduced schedule. But when she's off season, I think we underestimate how much she actually does train.
I think the training is, yeah.
Yeah. Because even during COVID, she shared that she was living with her team. So they came and moved in with her. And they were all like together and stuff where, you know, she has the money to accommodate all these people, you know? So,
the next thing about her too, she gets to pick and choose, you know, what tournament she wants to play. Yeah. A lot of players have that, you know, opportunity, but she does. Mm-hmm. And she's taking advantage of it. And I think it's smart.
No, fully, definitely. Definitely. Okay, my picks, I'm gonna stay on brand. I'm joking. No, I'm gonna go Felix. I've got a good feeling about Felix. I really, really do. Like, and I think all of these players putting out, like, I think it's gonna do work in his favor. Like, and I really have a feeling.
True.
I mean, his first title on the ATP tour came at a Masters event last year, but in doubles. So I think it would be so like almost poetic if the singles final or the singles title also came at a Masters event. And yeah, I think Miami would be a great opportunity. So again, I just hope the draw is kind. Like obviously the draw does kind of play into it, I guess. But I'm confident with the way he's playing at the moment. I think he could definitely go all the way. And on the women's side, yeah, I'm gonna go Osaka. Like, I think you'll be silly not to, really. Like, considering she's not played, obviously, yeah, we all know she hasn't played since Australia, but like you said, she's been training hard. She loves the hard courts. Like, it all kind of like just makes sense, like, for her. And I think she's done quite well in Miami in the past as well.
She won Miami before.
Was it Miami that she won, or Indian? Was it Indian Wells? I always get the two mixed up.
Miami.
It was Miami. Okay. So again.
Yeah.
Wells too.
So,
yeah, she did win Indian Wells. Yeah, she won both.
She loves hardcore. Yeah, she loves so it. That's her service.
I think it'll be interesting to see, but I'm looking forward to it. It's just a shame.
I'm looking forward to Miami, yeah.
The draw hasn't been made, like, as we record, but, yeah, we just hope the draw is kind to those players you mentioned.
Jordan, in case you don't know, I believe that draws are rigged.
God,
you probably don't want to hear that because you work in editing, but I've always been like, don't. You know, pro.
You know what? You know what? When I saw, what was it, Venus and Coco Gauff playing.
you can't see these type of things and tell me this is not rigged.
Yeah.
Really, this wasn't set up
it was
at
weird.
All.
No, it was weird. It was definitely weird. It was. Yeah.
It just makes you. It makes you think. It makes you question some things. So I agree there.
Oh, guys. Well, yeah. That wraps up this latest edition. Again, Jordan, like, it's been a pleasure having you on. So thank you for joining
us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Again, I'm so humbled. I've been a huge fan of both you guys for so long. So. Thank you for having me. No. And hopefully this is not the last time.
No, definitely not. I was going to say, definitely not. So we look forward to having you on again in the future, definitely. But yeah, guys, that wraps up this latest episode. So enjoy Miami. And yeah, until next time, take care.